Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Beatles tribute band to perform at Wagner Noel. John Fikes has been a huge fan of the Beatles since the age of 10. It seems only fitting that he has gone on to portray John Lennon in a Beatles tribute band called the Fab Four. "What do I not enjoy?" Fikes said in a phone interview. "I used to doodle John Lennon's signature. I had his signature memorized. I would draw that on my textbooks in school. I learned to play guitar out of a Beatles songbook that I had. It's been a lifelong passion of mine. I've watched the movies and the documentaries. It's kind of inevitable that I would be here." The group travels around the world performing and sharing its love of the iconic British rock band with thousands of other fans. Hardcore fans of the Beatles in the area will get a chance to hear some of their best songs when the tribute band makes a stop in Midland for a 7:30 p.m. concert August the 23rd at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/53BMCF75. The Emmy Award-winning group is elevated far above every other Beatles tribute due to their precise attention to detail. The particular show will focus mainly on the album Rubber Soul during the first act. Rubber Soul was the sixth studio album from the group and was released in 1965. The album includes songs such as Drive My Car, Norwegian Wood, You Won't See Me, and In My Life, just to name a few. "This is a Rubber Soul show," Fikes said. "We're giving you the entire album, all the tracks. We've been playing this show for a few months now. We're really tight on it, and I love Rubber Soul. It's sort of a left turn. There's a lot more acoustics on it. They start getting a bit deep into it lyrically. That's the first appearance of the sitar. I know Revolver is my favorite album, but Rubber Soul has my favorite song, which is In My Life." However, if some people aren't too familiar with Rubber Soul, then they need not to worry, as the second half of the show will feature other classics from the Beatles' later albums. "The second half of the show, we give you all the hits from 1967 and onward," Fikes said. "We'll do a With a Little Help from My Friends. We'll do Let It Be. We'll do stuff from Abbey Road. We'll do something that every Beatles fan will know. It's impossible to not love these songs. That's what makes these songs so easy to play. We've been playing these songs a lot, but they're so good. There's no complaints." For Fikes, watching all the movies and listening to the Beatles' music for so long has been a character study. "When I'm performing, it feels natural," Fikes said. "It all comes pretty natural to me because I love it so much, and it's been a big part of my life. I love getting to keep the fire burning with the Beatles' legacy and keep it alive." Fikes remembers fondly of seeing another Beatles tribute band when he was 16, which baffled him at first. "I grew up in a small town, and I saw a Beatles documentary, and then a Beatles tribute band came through and did a concert in the park, and it was such a revelation for me because I didn't know something like that existed," Fikes said. "All these years later, I'm doing the same thing that I saw as a kid." There have been many classic albums from the original British band, including Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, The White Album, and Abbey Road. While Fikes' favorite album is Revolver, he sometimes changes his mind. "I would give you a different answer if you asked me a month from now," Fikes said. "It's always changing. I love them all. I guess, traditionally, I've always chosen Revolver as my favorite because it was the first one I sat down and listened to." He described Revolver as having such a far-out sound. "You have Eleanor Rigby," Fikes said. "Love You Too" is another one. "Then you have got to Get You Into My Life," which has sort of a Motown sound to it. "That album is crazy. I was hypnotized by it." For more information about the show, go to tinyurl.com/BD9MPKFB. First annual Robbins Children's Health Fair set. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site is holding its first annual Children's Health Fair in honor of Robin Bush, George H.W., and Barbara Bush's daughter, who died of leukemia in 1953 while they lived in the home on West Ohio Street. September is Children's Cancer Awareness Month, and the historic site wanted to use the occasion to allow families to get information in a fun event. Robbins Children's Health Fair will be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, September the 14th, at the Bush Family Home State Historic Site, located at 1412 West Ohio Street in Midland. There will be booths under an air-conditioned tent that features clinics and doctors from around Midland and Odessa. Also, children can learn about their health by bringing a doll or teddy bear and learn what a doctor might do at a checkup doctor's visit. There will be Scooter dog food truck available for food purchase. Self-guided tours of the Bush home will also take place. Robin Bush was born in Compton, California on December 20, 1949, named after Barbara Bush's mother, who had recently died in a car accident. She was described as quiet and gentle. After returning to Texas and shortly after her brother Jeb was born, she was diagnosed with late stages of leukemia. Despite trying their best to take her to doctors that tried experimental treatments, Robin died on October the 11th, 1953. The Bush Family Home joined the Texas Historical Commission in 2023 and is one of 38 sites in the state of Texas. Its normal operating hours are Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The last tour begins at 4:15 p.m. Costco coming to Midland. Costco, which operates a chain of membership-only big-box warehouse club retail stores, is coming to Midland. The Midland Development Corporation unanimously approved a performance agreement Monday, and it was going to the Midland City Council Tuesday morning. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris said construction is expected to start in June of 2025 and be completed in August 2026. It will be built in West Midland north of State Highway 191 and west of State Highway 158. The minimum cap on capital investment is $50 million, Harris said. The building will be 174,000 square feet minimum, and the business will have 100 full-time equivalent jobs. We're excited to welcome them here, Harris said. Record-breaking run. Paris, France. Midland's Bryce Hopple finished fourth in the finals of the men's 800-meter run at the Paris Olympics in France. The Tall City native and Midland High graduate finished in a time of 1 minute and 41.67 seconds, breaking the American record in the 800 meters, but coming up one spot short of a medal. This was Hopple's second Olympic appearance and his first time running in the finals. Congratulations, Bryce. Obituaries. Susan E. Redman died on May the 25th of natural causes in Midland, Texas. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Naley Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Marvin Smith III, age 71, passed away peacefully in Austin, Texas, after a brief illness. A memorial service to celebrate Marvin's life will be held in Odessa at a later date this fall. Maria Perez Lynn, 91, of Odessa, died Monday, August the 12th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m., August the 15th, at Odessa Bible Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Teddy Eugene Parson, age 82, of Odessa, died Sunday, August the 4th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m., August the 17th, at Central Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Pedro Tovar, age 89 of Midland, died Friday, August the 9th in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. August the 14th at Our Lady of Guadalupe in Midland. Odessa College nearly ready to open Wood Health Sciences Building. Just 6 months in, Odessa College Associate Dean for Health Sciences, Lori Fierro Iverson, has toured the new Wood Health Sciences Building several times and is impressed. Estimated cost of the four-story, 83,000-square-foot building is $45 million. The building is due to have classes in it soon, but a grand opening is scheduled for early September. The Medical Center Health System Simulation Hospital is set up like an actual hospital. Students will be able to watch video of themselves to see how they do, and there are mannequins that they can practice on, a neonatal intensive care unit, trauma room, inpatient rooms, and others. There will also be classrooms, conference rooms, and a community room. I think that this is going to be such an amazing opportunity, not only for our students, but also for our community, Fierro Iverson said. This is basically a full-functioning hospital that we can provide students with a safe environment where they can learn, they can practice and finesse their skills, and do it in a safe setting without causing any kind of patient harm. The simulated hospital will give programs a chance to work together and help students brush up on their soft skills before they go out into the industry. Everyone is collaborating together. That has never been done in an environment before in this area that I know of, so that soft skill is going to be developed. I think we're really going to see our industry be surprised, but also grateful for the students' opportunity to get that down and not to be so awkward, because that's probably one of the most awkward things when they go into industry, Fierro Iverson said. Before coming to OC, the Fort Stockton native had worked at the University of Texas, El Paso, and Midland College, among other places. She added that she would like to bring in physician volunteers to talk to the students and people to volunteer to be patients. We want to invite the community to come. We'll give them scripts, so you'll be a heart attack patient and you'll be a stroke patient, and the students will have to talk to the patient in terms they can understand. You've got to learn how to talk to patients at different levels. One thing that I really am a big fan of is bringing chairs to the bedside when you're talking to your patient, because once you sit down and get on their level, instead of having that standing up versus the bed conversation, that barrier also tends to limit what patients will reveal because they're nervous. If you sit down, then it becomes a conversation rather than an interview. I always tell them, you're not making a chair. We're taking care of a human that is unpredictable, and I guarantee you, you are seeing them on their absolute worst day ever, because they wouldn't be here otherwise. So we have to be compassionate. We have to have understanding. We have to be emphatic, Fierro Iverson said. Those skills can't be taught from a book, but they can be in a safe environment. Hospice gives caregivers well-needed rest, by Tony King. Dear readers, recently I had my own experience with Medicare as my 92-year-old mother has reached her final stage of hospice. I feel it is important for me to explain hospice so those with a terminally ill loved one learn the value of it. This information was given to me by the hospice provider taking care of my mother. Dear Tony, I advise spouses and adult children who are seeking advice for their loved one that is having end-of-life issues. Hospice can help those who are taking care of a family member who has a serious health care issue during end-of-life care. Can you explain hospice to your readers? I am sure it will help those who are experiencing what you are, Tony. Hospice gives the primary caregiver well-needed rest during a stressful time. Tony writes, thank you for helping with my mother's transition from living at home to moving to a personal care home since her dementia has progressed. Hospice is a subject that the average caregiver does not understand. Many wait too long to discuss hospice with their loved one's doctor. Most Americans believe hospice is only for the last days to help a person die peacefully. I was blessed because the home health company helping with my mother's care explained she would qualify for hospice and advised me to talk with her primary care physician that she was terminally ill and needed hospice care. Because this process began more than 2 years ago, it made the transition a less stressful experience. Here is some helpful information about hospice. Healthcare professionals in the hospice system include physicians, nurses, social workers, spiritual counselors, certified nursing assistants, and volunteers. A hospice provider goes where the patient lives to provide the care. The 2024 Medicare and You Handbook explains on page 26 what hospice is and that Medicare covers hospice under Medicare Part A. The doctor who orders hospice must certify that a patient is terminally ill and has 6 months or less to live. When a patient agrees to hospice care, they agree to comfort care, palliative care, instead of treatment to cure the illness, and must sign a statement choosing hospice care instead of other Medicare-covered treatments for the terminal illness. Hospice can be recertified every 6 months by a hospice medical director or hospice doctor if the patient is still terminally ill, as in my mother's case. Original Medicare will be billed for the hospice care. Hospice will cover all medical care for terminal illness, and Original Medicare or a Medicare Advantage plan will pay for health problems that are unrelated. Co-pays will apply. Medicare-certified hospice care is usually given in the home or other facility, like a nursing or personal care home. Additional details on hospice are explained in Chapter 2 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide, Advanced Edition. Medicare costs under hospice are: you pay nothing for hospice care. Medicare pays. You pay a copayment of up to $5 per prescription for outpatient prescription drugs for pain and symptom management. You pay nothing for Medicare-approved inpatient respite care, which is a 5-day stay in a Medicare-approved facility so that an at-home caregiver may have a period of rest. Knowing that hospice provides comfort, dignity, love, and support. Talk with your loved one's doctor if you have concerns or need advice with this Medicare journey for your loved one's terminal health care issue. Remember, with Medicare, it's what you don't know that will hurt you. If you have a Medicare question, email info@tonysays.com or call 832-519-8664. Tony's new Confused About Medicare video series and Tony's Medicare books are available at tonysays.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram's oil report for Saturday, August 10th. Archrock to acquire Midland firm. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Two natural gas compression companies are combining forces in a $983 million transaction. Total Operations and Production Services, or TOPS, of Midland has agreed to be acquired by Archrock Incorporated of Houston. TOPS, a portfolio company of investment funds managed by affiliates of Apollo Global Management Incorporated, is a leading provider of contract gas compression services for the Permian Basin. The company specializes in lower emission, electric-driven compression for gas lift and other applications. It's that specialization in electric-driven compression that attracted Archrock, according to Brad Childers, President and Chief Executive Officer. Quote, "We like the business TOPS built," he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Continuing the quote, "In an area we've already invested in, TOPS does it best," end quote. TOPS brings with it approximately 580,000 horsepower of predominantly young electric motor drive compression assets, as well as a substantial and contracted backlog of new equipment. The combination will increase Archrock's Permian Basin compression capacity by 30% to approximately 2.2 million operating horsepower and increases the company's electric compression horsepower to approximately 648,000. Childress estimated over 50% of Archrock's total operating horsepower is in the Permian Basin. All of TOPS's employees will be welcomed into Archrock, he said. Childress said the impact of growing oil field electrification on the region's power grid, since the customers provide power on location through microgrids or other methods. Childress noted that the company's motto is, "We power a cleaner America," and said it's a philosophy the industry needs to adopt. Quote, "To preserve our license to operate, all markets need to invest in sustainable operations," he said. He predicted electrification will only continue to grow as transmission capacity is built out. As for Archrock, quote, "We want to be a leading provider of compression services, and with our investment in technology, digitization, and sustainability, we plan to grow with our customers," Childress said. Blackcomb Pipeline gets final investment decision. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Takeaway constraints that have sent Permian Basin natural gas prices into negative territory may soon come to an end. On the heels of the announcement that the Matterhorn Express pipeline will be entering service this fall, comes word that a final investment decision has been made to build the Blackcomb pipeline. Whitewater, MPLX, and Enbridge, through the WPC joint venture that owns the Whistler pipeline, are partnering with an affiliate of Targa Resources to build the 2.5 billion cubic foot, 365 mile, 42 inch line from the Permian Basin to the Agua Dulce area in South Texas. The developers proceeded with the project after securing enough firm transportation agreements with shippers, including Diamondback Energy, Devon Energy, Marathon Petroleum, and Targa Resources. Blackcomb will source natural gas from multiple Permian Basin connections, including gas processing facilities in the Midland Basin and the Agua Blanca pipeline in the Delaware Basin. Quote, quote, "It's an exciting opportunity, and we're pleased our joint venture with Whitewater and MPLX is already yielding growth opportunities," Michael Barnes, spokesperson for Enbridge, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, "Blackcomb is the fifth proposed pipeline project out of the Permian, but the first to reach FID after Matterhorn Express Pipeline," noted Alex Gafford with East Daily Analytics. Other proposed pipelines include the Warrior from Energy Transfer, Targa's Apex, and Moss Lake's Dela Express, while Kinder Morgan is seeking customers for a compression expansion on its Gulf Coast Express. Gafford noted that Targa's participation in Blackcomb likely means cancellation of the Apex proposal. Blackcomb would follow the 2.5 BCF per day Matterhorn Express pipeline to meet near-term production growth from the Permian, Gafford continued. But his analysis sees challenges for the project. Quote, "While the Permian is chronically constrained, our basin model shows latent gas egress capacity as production struggles to fill Blackcomb ahead of startup of the 2 billion cubic feet per day Saguaro connector in 2029. Producers would need to step up drilling more, as we assume, and crude pipelines would need to be expanded to raise the ceiling for oil-driven growth in order to fill Blackcomb and later Saguaro in our Permian model, he wrote in his analysis of the project. Blackcomb is expected to enter service in the second half of 2026 and will be constructed and operated by Whitewater. The WPC joint venture will own 70% of the project, 17.5% by Targa, and 12.5% by MPLX. The WPC joint venture, which owns the Whistler pipeline, is owned 50.6% by Whitewater, 30.4% by MPLX, and 19% by Enbridge. Produced Water Society, ready for Midland Conference. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. The Produced Water Society is getting ready for its big conference in Midland. Approximately 400 produced water-focused professionals will gather at the Midland Horseshoe on August 13th and 14th for the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. Steve Coffey, the Society's president, said speakers and discussions will play into the energy transition. Quote, "There's a lot of talk about the energy transition. I say energy expansion because we're really expanding on all the energy needs of the world, not just transitioning to one source," he told the reported Telegram in a telephone interview. That includes produced water's role in producing hydrogen and in carbon capture, he said. Another trending topic is beneficial reuse of produced water, but with a focus on mineral extraction. A couple of presenters will discuss their successes and failures in extracting minerals from produced water, he said. Other topics will cover orphaned wells and desalination, according to Coffey. Quote, "We plan to dig deeper into regulatory issues and see what the path forward is," he said. State Senator Kevin Sparks, John Schmitz of Select Water Solutions, and Eric Hoover, Chief Operating Officer of VTX Energy, will open the first day of the conference with keynote addresses. Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources, and Jamie McMillan with Bechtel will open the second day of the conference. The Society is approaching its 35th year, and Coffey reflected on how things have evolved during that time. Quote, "We've made good strides over the past 5 years. The infrastructure growth, increased water volumes have given us the opportunity to do things differently. With high volumes, it makes sense to do centralized treatment. That can cut costs to pennies per barrel. That would make a big difference," he said. Coffey also said he stresses that it is possible to have a better environment and a better bottom line. Quote, "It's not one or the other," he said. Trace Midstream acquires Northern Delaware assets. The story was written by Mella McEwen, staff writer. Consolidation in the Permian Basin energy sector continues as it expands from the upstream sector to the downstream sector. Trace Midstream Partners II, a portfolio company of Quantum Capital Group, has agreed to acquire Northern Delaware Basin natural gas gathering and transportation assets from LM Energy Delaware, a portfolio company of Old Ironsides Energy. Quote, "Trace decided to enter the Northern Delaware because it represents some of the best proven geology in the lower 48 and is supported by high levels of activity from best-in-class public and private operators," Josh Weber, chief executive officer, told the reported Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "We believe there is ample inventory across multiple benches to support many years of development in the region, setting us up for long-term success. the LM energy system is purpose-built for the expected activity levels and types of horizontal wells being drilled today, and we are confident there are significant opportunities to continue to develop new infrastructure projects complementary to the existing platform," end quote. Located in Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico, LM Energy's natural gas gathering and transportation system consists of high and low pressure gas pipelines with associated compression, dehydration, condensate handling, and vapor recovery capabilities. Currently, LM Energy is in the process of constructing multiple new compressor stations, new gathering pipelines, and a 20-inch diameter high-pressure transportation pipeline that will connect the existing gas gathering system to a number of gas processing facilities near Loving, New Mexico. Upon completion of these projects, the system will consist of approximately 170 miles of pipeline and 12 compressor stations, with a total design capacity of 650 million cubic feet per day. The system has over 80,000 dedicated acres and is supported by long-term fixed-fee contracts from multiple producers. In a statement announcing the agreement, Elliot Gerson, LM Energy Chief Executive Officer, said, quote, "I am sincerely grateful to our customers whose success was our tailwind over the last 5 years. It was very important to us to find a successor who would continue to focus on customer service and facilitate our customers' growth. Trace is an excellent team who we know will execute, and we are excited to watch them take this business to the next level," end quote. In connection with the transaction, Quantum Senior Advisor Jack Harper of Midland has joined the Trace Board of Directors. Prior to joining Quantum, Harper served as Executive Vice President, Lower 48, at ConocoPhillips and was a member of its Executive Committee. Earlier in his career, Harper served in various executive roles at Concho Resources, including as President from 2017 to 2021, until the company merged with ConocoPhillips. Northern Oil continues to grow Permian presence. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Since entering the Permian Basin a few years ago, Northern Oil and Gas has quickly built up a significant footprint of non-operated assets. In late July, the company struck again, teaming up with Vital Energy for the second time to acquire the assets of Point Energy Partners, a Fortress Investments portfolio company. Adam Durlin, president of Northern Oil, described the company's activities as being co-buyers in acquisitions. Quote, "It's more meat on the bone. It gives us more transparency from a development standpoint. Let's us plan the rest of our business," he told the Reporter Telegram by video chat. Durlin explained that Northern, through its holdings, has 10,000 wells with 100 operators, providing it with a large data set that it can analyze and share with its operating partners. Quote, "We can help operators plan a development program," he said, listing components like costs, well design, and well spacing. That proved to be true last year when Northern partnered with Vital to acquire Forge Energy, Durlin noted. Quote, "With Forge, we showed the world what was possible with co-buying. It evolved into a joint development," he said. Working together, he said the Forge assets outperformed expectations by 20%, while well costs were cut 13%. The Point Energy assets being acquired are primarily located in Ward County, approximately 4,000 net leasehold and mineral acres, 26.4 net producing wells, 1.6 net wells in process, and about 12.1 low break-even net undeveloped locations. Vital will serve as operator, with Northern Oil participating in development efforts. Durlam has observed consolidation taking place in the upstream sector and said the dynamics are shifting, but opportunities remain, and his company remains hungry for those opportunities. Quote, "There's no shortage of assets coming on the market," he said, "and we can be picky and looking for assets in core areas. We don't need to make acquisitions, so there are some opportunities we've passed on, some we've been outbid on, but we can get creative," end quote. Amid the consolidation, operators have begun updating their portfolios, and Durlam said his company has already been having conversations on potential acquisitions. One benefit of focusing on non-operated assets is the company is not beholden to one basin or one contiguous area, he said. Quote, "That benefits us with optionality," he said.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, August 10th, 2024. Religion. Community invited to remember at dedication. By Dr. Don Darwin Weeks, pastor of Connection Christian Church. So much of our human experience is remembering. The Bible uses the word remember almost synonymously with the word faith. We are told to remember over and over again, especially when Christians gather around the communion table. We do it to remember both the tragedy and triumph of Jesus' death. It is a moment in worship when we lament and remember that God can redeem even our most awful experiences. Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel puts it this way: "After all, God is God because he remembers." This month, our community remembers tremendous suffering from the mass shooting here, August 31st, 2019. Though it is painful to remember, it is also healing to join in solidarity and shared comfort. When we acknowledge our sorrows with others, we may discover that God is with us, though God may not look like what we expected. God may look like Jesus, who, while being executed on the cross, cries out, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." God may also look like friends who never leave our side. God may look like a mother who mourns fiercely. God may look like a community gathering to carry each other through to better days. God may look like love that never lets go, even when it's been to hell and back. God may look like light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome the light. As we acknowledge the fifth anniversary of August 31st, the community is invited to the dedication of the Bright Star Memorial at the University of Texas Permian Basin. This sculpture and surrounding park will stand as a memorial to all we have lost and as a testimony to the loving resilience of our community. We will have a brief sunset service to dedicate the memorial Thursday, August 29th at 8 p.m. Please wear yellow and park at the sports fields off Loop 338. I hope you will take time to remember, to care, to heal, and to discover that God is with us. Hughes combines church work with SRSU role. Former young adult minister becomes pulpit minister. by Bob Campbell. Alpine. Caleb Hughes came to the ministry in a roundabout way, working as a ranch hand and taxidermist, and joining the Alpine Church of Christ as its young adult minister, and then its preacher. A native of Grandview, south of Fort Worth, Hughes earned an associate degree at McLennan Community College in Waco and enrolled at Sol Ross State University for his bachelor's degree and a master's in range science and wildlife management. He is also a geographic information systems specialist for SRSU's Borderlands Research Institute. Where the church hits a wall today is in struggling to get to a point where we abide in Jesus Christ and his practices and become a natural outflow of hearts that look like Jesus, Hughes said. I also really enjoy teaching apologetics, investigating the reasons we have to know the reality of our God and the truth of the scripture. The Alpine Church of Christ at 402 East Sol Ross Avenue averages 30 people at its 10:45 a.m. Sunday services. Hughes' wife's name is Callie. College students get exposed to this flood of information that usually discounts Christianity, he said. In a college town, you meet people from everywhere who have very different backgrounds. But because of the struggle finding their identity that young people often have, their beliefs tend to be a little more malleable, and they are more receptive to biblical truths when these truths are presented in an enlightening way. It can be a wonderful thing to meet people with different backgrounds and give them new perspectives on who Jesus was and is, especially people who have been in a box for a lot of their lives. Hughes said traditional teachings about Jesus can seem very rehearsed and lose their luster. There is no shortage of reasons to continue pursuing Jesus and be captivated by a life of following his call, he said. Harrison Armstrong, an administrative coordinator 3 at Texas A&M University, is a longtime friend of Hughes, who said he is by far the most honest and admirable man I have ever met. Caleb was born about 200 years too late, Armstrong said. He deserves to be back in the 1800s. When you have a subject, he will not find the traditional church answer. He will dive deep into the Greek or Hebrew and give you the best, most honest answer. He will give you an answer that is thorough and deeply rooted in scripture and historical facts. Features from the Bible. Truth in scripture. The Lord appears to Elijah. 1 Kings 19. The word of the Lord came to Elijah there and asked him what he was doing there. He explained that he had been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty, that the Israelites had rejected his covenants, broken down his altars, and put his prophets to death with the sword, and that he was the only one left, and now they are trying to kill him. The Lord told Elijah to go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord was about to pass by. A strong wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. Next, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. Then came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. Following the fire, there was a gentle whisper. Hearing the gentle whisper, Elijah pulled his cloak over his face and went and stood at the mouth of the cave. A voice asked Elijah what he was doing there. Elijah answered as he had answered earlier. The Lord told Elijah to go back the way he had come and go to the desert of Damascus. And when he got there, to anoint Hazael king over Aram, Jehu king over Israel, and Elisha to succeed him as prophet. The Lord told Elijah that Jehu would put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha would put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. The Lord then said that he would reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees had not bowed down to Baal, and all whose mouths had not kissed him.
Master Gardeners, Do-It-Yourself Soil Sponges. This was written by Emmy Almschneider, Master Gardener. I was first introduced to soil sponges at the 2018 New Mexico Master Gardener Conference and have been a fan ever since. So, when I saw that the first July talk for the Permian Basin Master Gardeners AgriLife Extension 2024 Lunch and Learn online gardening series was on soil sponges as a water-saving strategy, I signed up immediately, and I wasn't disappointed. In 2018, I learned that in New Mexico, some gardeners were making soil sponges on a large backyard, think industrial-size scale. And in 2018, the focus was more about increasing organic matter in the soil than retaining water. But since 2018, we have become an increasingly arid land. The focus in the online gardening series was using soil sponges as a water retention strategy. And as we have written previously, retaining water in the soil is a goal in our increasingly arid environment. We need to do more than just cover our garden soil with organic matter. Nisa Patterson, the presenter, gave these key reasons for using soil sponges as they hold and store water in the ground, decrease evaporation, prevent water runoff, decrease your water use, help plants stay cool and hydrated, and increase soil nutrition. And if you look in natural or even man-made environments, you see that there is more vigorous plant life in conditions where water collects and is naturally stored. The organic material you are adding in a soil sponge really does function as a wet sponge. All you must do is add lots of organic material to your soil, water occasionally, and keep the organic material covered. If you garden, you know that you generate organic material beyond what you might compost. Too often, most of what you can't use ends up in the landfill. Creating soil sponges is a win-win situation for plants and people. What organic materials can you use? Basically, you can use any organic materials that you might use for composting: gardening waste, straw, grasses without seeds, cotton or wool products, edible fruit or vegetable waste, paper, cardboard, and newspaper. Perhaps it is simpler to say, don't use plastics or non-biodegradable materials, and avoid gardening waste that has been or might have been chemically sprayed. So, how do we do this? It is a simple procedure. Dig a hole or trench the size you want. The size and depth can be a small hole to accommodate the organic material left over from a nightly meal, to a large trench underlying or outlining your largest garden. Depth and area may vary with the supply of organic material you have.
Save the soil to recover the hole or trench. Fill the hole with organic material. Cover the hole with the soil you removed. Water into the sponge. If you want, you can incorporate a pipe to water directly into the sponge. Refill or adjust the soil level by adding soil. If the hole sinks over time as the organic material decomposes, you can add more soil. The next time you spend time working in your garden, instead of throwing the garden waste into the dumpster, recycle it into a soil sponge. Your garden will thank you in vegetables and flowers. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources.
Associated cancer risk with tattoos. Dear Dr. Roach, I've read in several sources that tattoo ink contains known carcinogens and that getting tattooed can cause skin reactions years after. I also read that tattooing can lead to keloids. Recently, I came across a study noting that tattoos were associated with a 21% increased risk of malignant lymphoma. It said that the risk goes above and beyond the concern of non-sterile tattoo practices, which lead to the transmission of blood diseases like hepatitis B. Are these risks overblown, or do these reports reflect legitimate concerns? Getting inked is becoming increasingly mainstream. Dr. Roach answers, professionally done tattoos have little risk when the aftercare instructions are followed, but there are still some health risks. The most common reactions are due to the ink. Delayed type hypersensitivity reactions occur infrequently, but when they do, it's normally days after the tattoo. Long-term reactions rarely happen after months or even years, but they are most often associated with the dyes used to make red coloring. Keloids, a thick scar caused by an overactive healing process, are a separate issue and can absolutely be a problem with tattoos, as well as many other procedures. People with a history of keloids should be very cautious about getting a tattoo. Professional tattoo parlors use good techniques and disposable needles, so the risk of hepatitis and other infectious complications are decreased to almost zero. Of course, amateur tattoos have an increased risk. Tattoo inks and dyes are not well regulated by the Food and Drug Administration, and some have been identified as cancer-causing. However, most studies have not shown an increase in cancer risk. You can write to Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Dear Abby, my husband, Silas, and I have been married for 30 years. He is the deacon and Sunday school teacher at our church. His brother is the pastor. Silas had a 2-year affair with another woman at work while he continued teaching Sunday school. I have a hard time with this. I will never trust him again, and I don't trust him in my faith. I resigned my position as church clerk immediately after finding out what he had done. I couldn't continue my position with the mess I was about to go through. I left him. 6 months later, we got back together, mainly for me to take ownership on everything I had worked for in my life. I have never returned to our church because he didn't step down from leadership, and the church didn't force him. Silas also lied and told the entire congregation from the pulpit that I had 2 affairs. How could he do this in front of the congregation of a church I've attended for 30 years? He is still not real in his faith or his love for me. I have no money to start over, as I withdrew all of my 401k and paid off everything we owed, including our home. How do I get out now with no funds? During the 6 months I was gone, he didn't even want to give me $300 a week to live and pay bills. If I leave with nothing. All I want is to be loved and happy. Please advise. Dear Abby writes, please accept my sympathy for this sorry situation. Contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline and ask for help to escape the financial straitjacket your husband has you in. Its toll-free phone number is 800-799-7233. Many other women have done this and succeeded, and so can you. Dear Abby, I've been in a relationship for 11 years. We're not married, nor do we live together. We are both 57. It has been kind of rocky over the years. He is controlling at times, then does nice things for me. Lately, he has expressed a desire for us to just have fun. Problem is, he's been having fun with his 27-year-old son and his son's friends, and he has managed to not include me at all. Then he proceeds to ask me what I want to do. When I mention a few date activities, he's not interested. He finds better things to do with his kid and complains to me that I never have any ideas about anything to do. He only wants sex with me. I want to do the fun things I have suggested to him. He claims he loves me and wants me to be part of his life. I feel I'm only a convenience for him. Help, please. Dear Abby responds, if there are things you would like to do, do them with people who are willing. While you're doing that, ask yourself if this is the kind of relationship you want in perpetuity. Whether your boyfriend is bored or having a midlife crisis, I can't opine. But if you feel he values you only for the sex you provide, it may be time to move on. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440 Los Angeles, California 90069 or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.